Steppin' Out Radio, where every week we feature two stories of people who have triumphed over all sorts of adversity in their lives. But the good news is they've come out on the other side. And week after week, month after month, year after year, we've been doing this show a long time, people have come on the show and shared with the audience their experience, strength, and hope in how their lives turned around from very often, you know, bad circumstances. And we have an awesome speaker today, and I'm really excited to bring him to the airwaves because of what he does, but also because of his incredible story. His name is Michael Dadashi. He's a former heroin addict, and he's now the CEO of Infinity Recovery. He also built from his own a corporation, a big one. It was one of Inc. magazine's top companies, and that's called MHD Enterprises, and it became a multi-million dollar venture. And that's another place where his staff also includes former people with addiction issues. And I want to give out at the beginning, so I don't forget, his website, the CEO, like I said, of Infinity Recovery. Check them out for sure at infinite recovery.com. And he also has another website called pouryourheart.com.
Pour your heart out.
I'm sorry. I'm tired. We did a lot of interviews today. But Michael, out of all of the interviews we've done, out of all of the years, there are so few heroes like you. And I call you a hero because I really am really in awe of what you've done. But on Steppin' Out Radio, we begin at the beginning and the person's story in the beginning of how their original problem started. And what is your beginning?
So my beginning is I drank alcohol for the first time at 15, and I blacked out the first time that I experimented with alcohol. And I don't remember what happened to me, you know, after the second or the third 40-ounce beer. But all I could remember was the amazing feeling that it produced. And when I woke up the next day, I chased that feeling for the next 10 years.
Now, were you out with friends? Was it that kind of thing?
Yeah, I was just out with friends, like a sleepover at a friend's house, you know, freshman year of high school. And
weren't terrified by the blackout? Because some people say it terrified them, and other people say they couldn't wait to do it again. And how is that? A blackout, for those of you who don't know, is when you drink and you miss big chunks of time that you can't remember.
Yeah, you know, it didn't scare me. That was the crazy thing, is it excited me. I loved being blacked out, and I just chased that feeling, like I said, for the next 10 years.
Okay, so give us a little overview. So at 15, you're still a freshman. How did the rest of your high school career look?
Well, when I started high school, I was a 4.0 student and had a ton of potential and was always in AP classes and, you know, different programs. But as my alcoholism and drug addiction progressed, I started skipping school on a regular basis and just put school and homework to the back burner. And my grades fell, and I barely graduated high school.
Did you hang out with a different group, too?
You know, I was hanging around with the same group that I was in middle school, but I started progress more and more to the select few people that drank and used the way that I did.
Wow. So where were your parents in this, or your family? Did they suspect there was, oh gosh, there's a big problem with Michael, or did they just say, oh, it's high school, everybody drinks?
Yeah, they basically said, yo, it's just high school. I was very good at hiding it. And even though there were some red flags, I was very good at manipulating them and hiding the problem.
Was there any addiction in your family or substance abuse issues?
There was. You know, my grandfather and my uncle suffered from alcoholism, so I had it in the family tree.
Right, which mostly everybody does, unfortunately. Yep. Okay, so I'm assuming your high school didn't cause you any trouble. Were you blacking out most of the times you drank, or was that just like an unusual case at 15 when you blacked out?
No, I would black out on a regular basis because I progressed to prescription pills. So I would, you know, mix a cocktail of Valium, Xanax, and alcohol, and that, you know, took me to the next level and caused me to black out many times.
And for those of you who are listening, don't try that because you literally can die. I mean, it could stop your heart. Obviously you're very lucky. So what did you graduated high school and what did your years after that look like?
So I barely, you know, graduated, I barely by like one credit graduated high school. And then, you know, that summer was just a complete blackout. And I somehow convinced my dad, you know, to enroll me in community college because I wanted to continue putting on the facade like I had everything right together and I was on the right track. But I couldn't even make it to the second day of community college that next fall. Mm. I went for one day and I was just too dope sick and couldn't make it back for the second day.
So you never went back?
No.
Which I'm sure didn't please your parents if they didn't get their money back, right?
Yeah, no, it definitely didn't please my parents.
So, okay, so that...
I was starting to really suspect a lot by that point.
So obviously that's really a bad indicator of not being out of control. So you didn't go to community college. Did they say, okay, now you got to get a job, or what happened next?
You know what? I just was a train off the tracks at that point. I basically just moved out, and I was just using every day. You know, I progressed to IV heroin, IV cocaine, and crack cocaine, and I was just using 24/7.
But what did you do for money?
I would just sell drugs and just, you know, hustle to make money.
Okay, so at this age, you're only, what, like 20, not even?
No, I was 18.
Oh, you were 18. Okay, but you didn't get sober till you were like 25, right?
I didn't get sober till I was 25, so that lasted for 7 years.
So that just kept on, and did you have any ramifications? Did you ever get arrested? Were you ever drunk driving? Were you ever, you know, were there any ramifications to your behavior?
Yeah, I had multiple overdoses. I would flip cars. I would, I got a DUI. I got a possession of marijuana charge.
Mm-hmm.
I had tons of health problems. I ended up getting endocarditis from shooting heroin, which is bacteria that gets into your heart, and 50% of my heart shut down.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and basically I was on my deathbed. You know, the doctors didn't know if I was going to make it, and I had to be hooked up to IV drip antibiotics for 2 months to try and cure that infection. And with the grace of God, I survived it.
Okay. And obviously you did survive it. And we're going to find out what happens next. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. If you want to sign up for our free newsletter and check us out for more stories, we have so many stories from celebrities to lawyers to everybody in between. Go to steppinoutradio.com. Sign up for our free newsletter, and also we have a brand new mobile app, so you can, it's great, it's, and you can get it on our website at steppinoutradio.com, and it has all different kinds of stories categorized by issues, whether it be alcohol, opioids, drugs, and alcohol. We even do stories from the family and friends, so you're definitely going to want to check that out. And again, we're talking to an awesome human being and speaker. His name is Michael Dadashi. He wrote, he is the CEO of Infinite Recovery. And I want to give you that website. It's infiniterecovery.com. He also has another website called pouryourheartout.com. And Michael has done something that honestly, I'm kind of saddened to admit that many people that come on the show don't do it, but he also formed a huge business that, you know, Inc. magazine named one of the fastest growing private companies in the U.S. in 2012 and 2013, where he hires former people with addiction issues. And I think, wow, what a way of giving back and just awesome. So we're going to come back with more of Michael's story. You're listening to Steppin' Out. We'll be back with more of Michael's story up next. Welcome back. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio, true stories of addiction and recovery, or any story where people really have triumphed over all sorts of adversity in their lives, but have come out on the other side. That's the good news. And we're talking to Michael Dadashi. And Michael is a former heroin addict himself, but he's also the CEO of Infinite Recovery, and he owns a very, you know, successful corporation. Real quick, go to infiniterecovery.com, and his other website is pouryourheartout.com. But Michael, before we left to take a quick break, you were telling us that you were in the hospital because you had a really serious heart issue with bacteria getting in your heart, and only 50% of your heart was working, and I guess you're all of 20-something years old. So what happened next? I'm assuming your parents obviously had to know. They must have been terrified and horrified. But what happened?
Yeah, so basically I was in the emergency room because they rushed me to the emergency room because, you know, I fell over with a 105 fever from the heart infection. You know, it was just overwhelming my whole body and my whole central nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
Have that heart failure. So I was in the emergency room for 2 weeks, hooked up to a PICC line, you know, getting the IV drip antibiotics, and I was actually so delusional and so addicted at that point that I was having my friends sneak into the hospital and smuggle cocaine into the hospital, which I was then putting into my IV.
Oh, my God, what a terrible friend. And
yeah.
Speaking of friends, did you have friends, or, you know, on that, in that piece of your life?
I had friends. They were all drug dealers or people that I sold drugs to.
So you kind of left your old high school friends and everybody behind that wasn't in your world of drugs.
Exactly. Or the friends that turned, you know, to a life of drugs.
Right. So this guy would actually bring cocaine into, wow.
Yeah, he'd
wow.
bring cocaine into the hospital, into the emergency room, and I would mix it up in water and put it in my PICC line.
And, oh, God, you're so lucky to be alive.
I know.
Did you get a rush of something when the cocaine went into your, you know, into your body?
Yeah, of course I did.
Oh,
I was doing
God.
It for the effect produced.
Right, and only 50% was working. Well, you're here, you're a miracle. So, okay, so you're in the hospital. This is happening. How long did you stay there on IV antibiotics?
So basically, I was in the emergency room for 2 weeks, and I couldn't afford, because I didn't have insurance, I didn't have any money in my bank account, so mm-hmm. I couldn't afford to be in the emergency room any longer. That hospital is charging me, you know, $3,000 a day to be in that bed.
Wow.
And they had, you know, they had to discharge me and move me to a place that was more affordable, that would give me, you know, charity. So I had to be moved to a nursing home for 2 months.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Yeah. All the while receiving IVs or no, just because you had to recoup?
No. Yeah. Receiving the IV drip antibiotics, oxicillin.
It took that. Wow.
Okay. 2 months of IV antibiotics to kill this infection.
So that must have been very depressing and worrisome.
Time.
What was your feeling? I'm sure.
The lowest point I'd ever been in. I was in a nursing home with the PICC line, you know, hooked up to my heart, dripping the antibiotics in, and I was on methadone and, you know, having to eat nursing home food, and I was just so freaking miserable.
Now, was it a wake-up call? Did you ever think, wow, you know, I got myself into this? Or were you, in your mind, were you thinking, I can't wait to get out and do more drugs again?
No, I wanted to get high the whole time I was in there, just to take away the pain, because mm-hmm. I was so uncomfortable in my own skin, you know, being bedridden for 3 months, 2.5 months, and just feeling sick. Extreme depression and extreme anxiety and extreme self-pity and remorse. I just wanted to get high again, just to take the pain away. But I had a firm resolution also not to get high, because I knew that's what had caused me to get in there. So I was being pulled in both directions.
Now, did they ever bring meetings into a nursing home or the hospital? Not to say meetings are the only answer, but I'm just curious.
No, they would bring in psychologists to try and talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was like, you know, Charlie Brown.
Right.
Didn't hear anything.
Okay. Were they, well, I imagine they were just doing a lot of intake? I don't know. Were they doing lots? Were they trying to do one-on-one therapy or?
They were, but they said that my case was too complex. They didn't understand how to help me.
Wow. And that's surprising that they wouldn't bring a meeting in. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
I had ever experienced anybody of my nature before because this was a true nursing home. So everybody in there
is elderly, right?
90 plus years old, and they're about to die. I mean, I was 23 years old and a chronic heroin addict. So.
Now, did your parents visit? Did you have friends visiting?
Oh, yeah, my parents visited all the time.
Oh, okay. So you had that outlet.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're in a real conundrum, or whatever you want to say, because you know you can't do drugs, but yet you can't wait because of the way you feel. So how did it work? You know, how did it work itself out? What happened next?
So basically, I was in that nursing home for 2 months, and they were weaning me off the methadone and the hydrocodone and everything else. And then when they finally cured the endocarditis and my infection went away, you know, they discharged me. And 2 days after getting discharged from the nursing home, I overdosed on Oxycontin and Xanax and drove off of a 9-foot embankment.
Oh, my God. Wow. Your story is unbelievable. So, what injuries did that cause?
Literally, I didn't even get one scratch on my body. I think, you know, the angels were just, surrounding me as the car drove off of the embankment.
Did you have your seatbelt on?
Yeah, it's the craziest thing. I don't remember because I had overdosed and I was in a blackout. I don't remember putting my seatbelt on. I don't even remember getting in the car. I just remember waking up hanging from my seatbelt.
Oh, gosh. So, okay, so you're hanging on a cliff, literally, with your seatbelt on.
Yeah.
And who finds you?
The police and firefighters, the jaws of life, had to come cut me out of the car.
Oh, gosh. But you walked away.
Yeah, I walked away unscathed and not even one bruise on my body.
Yeah, that had to be angels. That had to be something. Maybe there was a reason. And we're going to find out what that reason was. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio. I'm Denise McEntee, your host. We have with us, gosh, you hear his story. It's incredible. His name, and he's a great guy, as you'll hear even more, is Michael Dadashi. And as you can hear, he's a former heroin addict, but he's now the CEO of Infinite Recovery, and you can check them out at infiniterecovery.com. He also has another website, pouryourheartout.com. And if you want to check out more stories like Michael's, but again, the good news is there's hope and there's help, go to our website at www.steppingoutradio.com. Please sign up for our newsletter. Drop us a line. We'd love to hear from you. And also, the really cool news is we have a brand new mobile app that works on your iPhone and your Android. It's free, and it is chock full of all these great stories of how people have transformed their lives like Michael did. And we also, if you sign up for our free newsletter, we're going to be doing a lot of sober type events, and we're doing a gala in New York City if you happen to live here, honoring a bunch of people. And, so you're going to want to really check us out, sign up for our free newsletter. And again, check out Michael's website, InfiniteRecovery.com. So we'll be back with more of Michael Dadashi's story up next. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio, and I'm Denise McEntee, your host. Be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're listening to Steppin' Out Radio, true stories of people who have triumphed over adversity. And in our guest's case, he certainly triumphed over serious, serious addiction issues and came out on the other side. His name is Michael Dadashi, and he's CEO of Infinite Recovery, and you can check them out at infiniterecovery.com. But before we left, Michael had us literally in a cliffhanger because his car was hanging on a cliff, and miraculously he was uninjured, but they did have to use the jaws of life to get him out. So was that the wake-up call, or what happened next?
You know what? That should have been the wake-up call. But even, you know, half a dozen times before that, I had had, you know, tremendous wake-up calls. But basically, after that accident and the firefighters cut me out of the car, I checked into rehab, an inpatient rehab for the first time, and I stayed there for 28 days. And the first day out, I drank alcohol and shot heroin again.
Wow. So what went wrong there, do you think? You just weren't ready to hear the message.
Yeah, I had a reservation that I could still drink alcohol. You know, I had that reservation that I could still drink alcohol.
But when you drank alcohol, I'm assuming when you drank alcohol, then it lowered your, you know, ability to resist doing other drugs.
Big time, big time. The second, you know, I got 2 to 3 beers in me, I wanted to shoot heroin.
Right. Okay, so that was devastating. You shot up again, and what happened after that? Did it continue, or did you reel it back in?
Basically, I used for another year, and then I went back to that same treatment center. You know, these were state-funded facilities here in Austin, mm-hmm. You know. So I went back and applied for, you know, the state funding and got it because I was an IV heroin addict and I'm always first on the list.
Right.
So I got that state funding and went back to the rehab for the second time. And this time I went in there with a firm resolution not to ever drink and use again. You know, I really had a firm resolution. And I knew, you know, from my past experience that alcohol was not an option now. You know, I didn't have that reservation anymore.
Right. Some people think, all right, I can drink. That's not my drug of choice. But it usually ends in, you know, in exactly what happened to you. But so you had this resolve and you went back.
Yeah. So I had that realization that there was always going to be, you know, a syringe at the bottom of a beer bottle. And I was just made up my mind and that I was going to stay sober for the rest of my life and that alcohol wasn't an option, weed was not an option, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No mind-altering substances were going to be in my vocabulary. And I made it 9 months. You know, I got into a sober home. I started to work as a busboy at a local cafeteria. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd ride my bike to work every day. You know, I would just, I really tried to get all my ducks in a row.
Sure.
You know, live in a sober environment, go to work 5 days a week, work out at the gym, go get a sober girlfriend.
Did you attend meetings or meet or
try and get a career going? I tried to get all my ducks in a row. You know, I tried to manage my life to the best of my ability. But what ended up happening was inside I was still sick as ever, and I still felt irritable, restless, and discontent.
Mm-hmm. So that's not good. So what happened?
So basically, yeah, I stayed sober for 9 months on sheer willpower, and then suddenly, you know, the idea came into my mind that I could take a few Norco and get away with it.
Mm-hmm. And you're still living at the sober living at this point?
I had gotten an apartment,
okay.
And I was living on my own because I was 9 months sober.
Right, you know, right.
I'd lived in the sober home for 3 months, and then I moved out and moved into my mom's home. And then after living at my mom's house for 2 months, I was 5 months sober. I got my own place, and things were looking amazing. You know, I was getting a ton of pats on the back telling me how good I was doing, and everything external looked like it was in the perfect place and look like I was, you know, on the right track. But inside I was dying. You know, I was still being driven by fear. I still had a huge ego. I still was selfish, self-centered. I still, you know, was addicted to more, whether it be more money or more clothes or more working out. You know, mm-hmm. I constantly was never satisfied with anything I was doing.
And you had no peace of mind, it sounds like.
No, I had no peace of mind, and I had no spiritual program of action. You know, I was just staying sober on sheer willpower, and I was trying to fix all of my external stuff to make my
So you took those two pills, and then what happened?
Yeah, I took the two pills, and I was off to the races again. 2 weeks later, I was smoking crack.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Okay, so obviously you got sober. So after you smoked crack, how long did that go on for?
That went on for another couple years, on and off. You know, I would just stop after a couple months and then get another 6 months, and I'd stop for another or I'd go on for another couple months, then I'd stop for 3 months. So that went on, off and on, for 3 years, because I really, two and a half years, I really, deep down in my soul, wanted to be sober. I didn't want to use, but I was, every time I used, I was using against my will.
Right. It was counter, right, to what, the way you felt. So
yeah.
You did stop. You've done incredible things. So what was the point where you had that moment of clarity, spiritual awakening, or even if you didn't, what was the moment where it stopped for you and state stopped?
Well, the point that I finally got to was I saw that nothing external to me was going to keep me sober. Mm-hmm. You know, that delusion was smashed. I couldn't make enough money. I couldn't get the right apartment or the right car or live in the right zip code or have the right group of friends or have the right girlfriend or, you know, have the right career. None of those things made me happy. I finally saw that literally nothing in the world made me happy. You know, my drug of choice was always more,
right.
more. I want more. I want more. I want more. Never satisfied.
And then I'll be happy, right?
Yeah. So that delusion was smashed, and once that delusion was smashed, it was coupled with me being on another crack cocaine spree and just being, you know, taken to my knees by crack cocaine and seeing, oh, my God, you're using against your will again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would wake up every morning not wanting to use, but literally I was on autopilot to the crack dealer's house.
Right.
Like, I couldn't stop myself from using. So that was that, you know, moment of clarity that I'm completely screwed.
Right.
I'm pinned into a corner. Like,
right.
I've got no other options. And that's when I turned to the 12 steps.
Okay. And what happened when you went? You went to a meeting, I'm assuming. And
yeah,
all this time you had never been to a meeting? All this time had you been to a meeting, but you never turned to the steps, or you never really bought into the 12-step meetings?
No, this whole time, 5 years prior to me getting clean, I was in meetings every day.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay.
I was going to meetings every day. I was a meeting-making fool.
But you didn't, like you said, turn to the steps.
No, I was a poser.
So what happened when you did turn to the steps?
I had a revolutionary spiritual awakening.
Wow.
And
yeah. What was that like?
It was like nothing I had ever experienced before. It was like taking the biggest hit of crack cocaine. Yeah, it was of the educational variety. You know, it didn't happen immediately. I had, you know, a lightning bolt hit me the last day that I used, because like I said, I was finally painted into a corner. I finally had all the delusions smashed that I could keep myself sober and that I could make myself happy. All those delusions being smashed was like a lightning bolt that hit me that put, you know, fire up under my feet to start moving in the right direction. But through working the 12 steps, I finished all 12 steps in the matter of like 3 or 4 months. So it happened over time. But by month 4, month 5, I had a complete psychic change and my whole perception of the world changed.
That's great. Well, we only have about, a little over a minute, unfortunately. So tell us about how great your life is now, because it is great. And like I said, we only have about a minute. But if you could get that in there, because I want people to know, how great it is now.
Well, so basically when I got sober July 20th, 2009, I quit my job. I started my own business, and I just jumped out on a leap of faith because my whole life revolved around God and serving God. and I wanted to make my own schedule. I didn't want to work a 9-to-5. I wanted to be able to help people on a regular basis. I wanted to be able to make a lot recovery my number one priority. So I started my own company, started employing people in recovery, and just basically devoted my life to being of service and to seeking God on a daily basis because I knew my life depended on it.
And I want to just tell the audience, because we only have a couple of seconds, and I'm sorry, Michael, because your story could go on and on. And Michael did do that. He formed a company called MHD Enterprises, where he, like he said, he employed people in recovery. And he also is the CEO, and I really want you to go to the website and check it out. It's called Infinite Recovery. He's the CEO. And if he can do it after this story, anyone can. And that's infiniterecovery.com. Michael, thank you so much for being with us.